This is Audible.
Blackstone Audio presents Reshaping It All, Motivation for Physical and Spiritual Fitness by Candace Cameron Bure with Darlene Schacht. This book is read by Candace Cameron Bure.
Dedication. This book is dedicated to the countless women and gentlemen who have written me through the years, struggling not only with their weight, but with their spiritual life. You're the reason my thoughts, stories, defeats, and triumphs have been penned. I pray that in sharing some of my experiences, it will encourage and inspire you in bigger ways than you could have imagined.
Chapter 1, A Full House of My Own. Two nights ago, Mom was in the kitchen when she heard Lev screaming, "Grandma! Grandma!" at the top of his lungs. Actually, I think the entire neighborhood heard him. Startled, she ran outside to find Lev, standing on the front porch with tears streaming down his face. Meanwhile, Samson, our friendly canine giant, was proudly standing by, displaying his latest hunting trophy, a Muscovy duck. Make that a dead duck. It was a little too gruesome for Mom's liking, and Lev's sensitive soul, too, for that matter, who had just witnessed the aftermath of the hunt. Samson's tail didn't skip a beat as it waved a flag announcing his victory. Arriving at home, I was addressed by three children and one concerned grandma who relayed each detail in color. Upon further investigation, we discovered that Samson had tangled with the wrong duck, leaving five orphan ducklings waiting in a nearby drain for Mama Muscovy to come waddling home. Now three kids and five ducks were crying, which put a whole new spin on the once cheerful tune, "Six Little Ducks Went Out to Play." The next morning, my daughter Natasha and the neighbors rescued the ducklings, packed their feathered bags, and moved them into our guest room. After all, Val and I only have three kids, three dogs, one hamster, a tortoise, and two busy careers on our plate. What's five more beaks to feed? After looking into the persuasive eyes of my youngest son, Max, I agreed to take them in for a week or so, but also thought it best to give the Wildlife Center a call. They said to bring the ducklings into the center where they would care for them until it was time to introduce them back into the wild. I got the feeling that their idea of the wild was as far away from the Bure family as possible. We packed the ducks into a cardboard box, along with some grass, a bowl of water, and one of Samson's favorite chew toys. No, not their mother. And made our way out to the car. Natasha, being the drama queen that she is, cried the entire way there. But once she saw the ducks settling in, she agreed that it was the best plan. I'm glad we rescued the ducklings. Disappointed that my doggy annihilated their mom, and thrilled that I'm not adding five ducks to our already full house. We all miss our feathered little friends, but as cute as they were, that chirping had started to ring in our ears. So there you have a glimpse into the life of a Hollywood star. Glamorous, huh? Life can be glamorous at times when I'm traveling to far-off places, shooting a movie, or meeting fellow celebrities. But behind the scenes, I live what most would consider an ordinary life. I drive my kids to and from school most days. I participate in classroom mom stuff. I'm on the board of our school's annual auction committee each year. I take our dogs for walks and feed them. We eat dinner at home almost every night. I work out with friends, not a personal trainer. I take an exercise class on Monday mornings in our school gym with a bunch of other moms. I'm in charge of paying the bills, writing checks, and filing each month. I fly economy most of the time, not first class. I shop for our groceries. I don't have a nanny, a chef, a personal trainer, a driver, or even a personal assistant. And boy, do I wish I did some days. I mop my floors often because our dogs like to swim in the pool, then come in the house wet with mud on their feet. And let's not forget the feathers. I'm a stain removal fanatic, and I'm good at it. And like everyone else, I hang out at Starbucks. Yes, in many ways my life is ordinary, but it's also extraordinary because of my relationship with the Most High God. I pray this book will be more than a weight loss book, and far more than my testimony. I pray that by it, faith will be your compass in this journey through weight loss to freedom, as it has also been mine. Not only is God wanting to walk this journey with you, He's ready to equip you to handle the job. Why?
Because he is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that works in us. Ephesians 3:20, NKJV. And besides that, he cares so deeply for you that even the hairs on your head are numbered. I've known God since the age of 12, but even though I called myself a Christian and said the sinner's prayer, I wasn't living like one. It's different now. Today, rather than just walking alone under the umbrella of grace, I desire to walk there in fellowship with him, a fellowship that has led me on a journey to freedom in Christ. I've made many decisions about work because of my Christian walk. I've turned down several TV series to stay at home and raise my children. I've also turned down other roles because of content issues I feel strongly about. I never thought I'd be someone who'd have the opportunity to speak at churches and share my testimony with thousands of people, but I can see now how God is using the success of Full House to reach millions of people for him. How cool is that? It's not every day that an opportunity like Full House comes along, but it did, and I'm glad that I was there to be a part of it all. I loved every day that I spent growing up in front of the camera and working on the set with others. Acting always has and always will be a passion of mine. However, once family came along, I felt a desire to adjust my priorities. Marrying an NHL hockey star and having three kids will change anyone's life, and it changed mine immensely. Suddenly, I went from being a television star living in Hollywood to starring in my own role as a wife and mother at home with my kids. Because I love my career, the decision to be a stay-at-home mom was a tough one. We were living in Calgary, my oldest child Natasha was born, and I had started meeting with agents in LA again. After being in LA for a week and a half, I realized I was miserable. I hadn't seen my husband Val in 10 days, and by the time I'd get home each night, Natasha was already asleep. Anyone who's a mom knows how tough that can be. Shortly after returning home, Val and I sat down for a talk, and I poured out my thoughts. Val's response was more than sympathetic, supportive, and encouraging, which was exactly what I needed to hear. While he had been fully supportive of my dreams, part of him quietly hoped I'd come to this conclusion. This reassurance that we were on the same page was great. We both looked forward to the opportunity it offered me to attend his games and keep cheering him on. Both Val and I have never had a single regret in making our decision. I love working, but I also love the fact that God nudges us along through the seasons of our lives into unexpected places. That season of my life was wonderful in so many ways. I was a young woman ready to open a new chapter in my life as a wife and a mom. The smile on my face went a long way, but at times it was covering a lot of insecurities and unknowns in my life. It was a season of blessings and a season of struggle. And during that time, I took my first steps into the cycle of bulimia. It started in Montreal. I was 19, engaged, and living with Val, as a good Christian girl ought not to do. Perhaps if I had been living and walking in faith, I wouldn't have started in the cycle of binging and purging. But I did. One would expect that my situation had everything to do with the pin-thin expectations of Hollywood, the desire that so many starlets have to be thin. After all, I did fit the role of DJ Tanner, the sister with the Charlie Brown cheeks, who once went on a crash diet herself. But no, that wasn't me. It had nothing to do with body image or trying to lose weight, but had everything to do with adjustment and fear. As I prepared for marriage, having stopped working, as I had been since I was 5, and was living in a foreign city, I felt that I had nothing left of my old life to turn to for balance. I was thrown, albeit happily, into a world I knew nothing about, a housewife, a hockey wife, and soon after, a mom. Loneliness set in during those years when Val was on the road, as it does for most hockey wives. We enjoyed wonderful summers together, but his time with the NHL essentially felt like a 6-month road trip, at which time I was alone. Had it not been for our telephone calls 2 to 3 times a day, I don't know what I would have done. What I did do is binge. There's something oddly comforting about food, or better said, the thought of food, that tricks our minds into believing that it can and will fill our void. And so I listened to the lie, hoping that it too would fill mine.
In the beginning, I only did it when Val was on the road, when I was by myself, me, the TV, and my food. One bite, one mouthful, one spoonful, then two, until I was disgusted with the amount I'd consumed. Hoping to undo my discomfort and guilt, I would purge. With all things bad, the more you do it, the more you get wrapped up in it. Thus, it started happening when I wasn't alone, until I finally got caught. There it was, out in the open. I stood face to face with my dad, watching him tear up as he discovered my shame. I knew he was afraid and worried for me, and since I love him so much, it broke my heart. I never wanted my actions to hurt the people I love. English writer Monica Baldwin writes, "What makes humility so desirable is the marvelous thing it does to us. It creates in us a capacity for the closest possible intimacy with God." Humiliation depicts mankind as broken and weak before God, yet it holds power and freedom to those it affects. Getting caught, embarrassed, and ashamed was finally the turning point for me. The shame of admitting the lie in my heart was the truth that set me free. What I didn't realize at the time is that my heart was longing for the things of this world. I ran to comfort food instead of running to God. I discovered my sin, but I hadn't discovered that my heart was in the wrong place. I sought moral reformation instead of a spiritual transformation. I had known who He was, but I still hadn't grasped who I was in His sight. After reading a book my brother Kurt gave to me, The Way of the Master by Ray Comfort, my life and walk with God changed forever. It spoke of the Ten Commandments and revealed my sin in its true light. That day in church, way back when I was 12, I had prayed the sinner's prayer, asking God to forgive my sins, but I didn't even understand what my sin was. After holding my life up against the standard of the Ten Commandments, the law revealed my sin. And I went through every commandment, realizing that I had broken them all. I also realized that God was going to judge me by this standard, not by the world's. If we break even the least of His commandments, we have broken His law, James 2:10. It would have been easy had I been able to go on measuring myself against the lies of other Hollywood child stars. But if I had, I wouldn't be walking in the peace and freedom that I am today. Seeing who I am in sin and who I've become through Him has caused me to drop to my knees and ask for forgiveness. I have come to the realization of how amazing God is by sending His Son, Jesus, to pay for my sin. That's why I choose to live a life pleasing to God and bask in the grace He gives to each and every one of us. God has changed me in ways that words cannot describe. He has transformed the way I think and live my life. Things that were once important to me no longer are. I can't help but share that good news with you, how it has set me free and how it can also free you. My desire stays strong each and every day because of the gratitude I have in my heart for His selfless work on the cross. I'm so thankful for His sacrifice that I ask Him every day, "How can I be used? What can I do for you, Lord?" Perhaps writing this book and sharing my journey with you is one small way I can serve. Leaving the past behind, I began a new walk with Christ, and I pray you will as well, no matter what stage you are in your journey. Whether you suffer with a constant pull to the fridge, have discouragement over failed weight loss attempts, sense an empty space that you're filling with food, or you are hoping to glean motivation, this book is for you. I often receive letters from women who tell me they've lost 20, 30, 40, even 90 pounds. Weight they could never lose before is finally coming off. What's their secret to success? It's the same as mine. We finally moved faith to the forefront, which includes putting God first in our plan to lose weight. As I take you with me on the journey through weight loss, I'd like us to step out of the box and step into a better understanding of our complexity. God's word teaches that we consist of a physical body and a spirit, and yet it also speaks of our flesh. Now, our flesh, in this sense, doesn't refer to our actual physical flesh or skin. It refers to the innate desires or gut instincts that may be immediately satisfying but are ultimately destructive. Our physical body and spirit both play an important role in forming who we are, but must be kept in line from our flesh. If either our physical body or our spirit is out of alignment, we'll feel a spiritual imbalance. Oftentimes, we also feel a physical imbalance, which results in annoying symptoms such as a tightening waistband, lack of energy, or a disagreeable scale. In order to recognize these separate components of your being and empower you to train them effectively, we'll discuss these three elements and how they work together in this book. Starting a diet or buying a new shade of lipstick won't put you on a path to freedom. It might make you feel good on the outside, which is a natural part of your womanhood, but the change must begin with the transformation by the spirit, the renewing of our minds. In the next 18 chapters, I'm going to teach you how to fill that empty space that calls out for food. I'll encourage you along the journey like a personal trainer that's cheering you on. I'll share ideas that will help you put the food down when it's time and later wisely pick it up again. And I'll offer practical tips on eating well and getting fit. At the end of the following chapters, you'll find a section called The Pantry, chocked full of food for thought. The pantry is organized for listeners on the go who want to grab something quick to chew on. There you'll find a slice of advice, which is my response to personal fan mail. You'll also find a pinch of practicality, offering practical application ideas and a quote in The Candy Dish. And if you're looking for a recap of scripture used in each chapter, check out Food for Thought. In a recent interview with Us Weekly magazine, I was asked, "You're not starving yourself, right?" The truth is that I love to eat, and I don't mind putting out the energy to stay fit. I enjoy wine with dinner, and I love my dessert. But the difference is that I've become accustomed to making better choices in the way I eat. Do I count calories? Not a chance. Do I make good choices with faith-focused determination? Absolutely. Finally getting it right, I'm 25 pounds lighter than I was on Full House. I have a full house of my own, and I feel better than I ever did. Chapter 2, The Inside Scoop. While many of you were enjoying the summer heat by the pool, I was enjoying an early Christmas in Chester, Vermont, filming the Hallmark movie Moonlight and Mistletoe, where I starred alongside the adorable Tom Arnold. Once the movie was wrapped, I answered the usual questions like, what is Tom Arnold like? What is an average day like when you're working on set? Can you tell us about your wardrobe? How did they keep the snow from melting? Did you pick up any makeup tips that you can use at home? Do you have any upcoming projects in the works? I can tell you that most days started around 7 a.m., and we shot 12 to 14-hour days. Some days were really hot, which was difficult when you have on 5 layers of t-shirts, sweaters, coats, gloves, and scarves. I was pretty much in every scene, so there wasn't a day I didn't work. And after my long day was done, I'd have another hour of work back in my hotel room learning the next day's lines. That was an average day. I can also tell you that Tom Arnold was wonderful to work with. I loved watching him work. His creativity in delivering everyday lines is inspiring. He was generous on set, buying the crew ice cream and pizzas on long days, and he respected my faith. In this chapter, I'm going to give you the inside scoop, but it won't be about television, movies, or magazines. This one will be about you. When we fully understand what is really going on inside us, we can then understand why we're inclined to make the choices we do. We'll also understand why the transforming of our bodies must begin by the renewing of our minds. Our bodies aren't making these detrimental choices for us. They are simply animated by a mind that needs a mental makeover. Let's get started, shall we? Breaking up is hard to do. Changing our thought pattern sounds like a step we can easily take, But the problem we often find ourselves facing is that our minds are in one place while our heart is in another. Since we're so in love with food, the thought of breaking up with it is devastating. Just remember, it's only food. It's not like you're going to prom together. And I don't know about you, but I'd rather go alone than with an extra 20 pounds around my waist. Been there, done that. Yeah, I know we're not supposed to feel self-conscious about such things, but it's hard not to feel a little ugly Betty when you're under the microscope on national television, wearing an off-the-shoulder, puffy-sleeved green velvet dress, while my half-sized television rival had on a slinky little black one. I watched my date kissing his ex. While DJ made her entrance on stage that night, I wanted nothing more than to make a quick exit, put on a baggy sweatshirt, and call it a night. Who did I turn to for comfort? Most likely food, since we were in a steady relationship at the time. As a result of this mindset, many of us spend our lifetime searching for a miraculous way to keep the binge and lose the bulge. Instead of taming our uncontrolled appetite to behave like it should, we continue to nurture and spoil it over time. The morning starts off with a longing for lunch and a yearning for just the right thing till we get it. We complain how bloated we feel after lunch, and then within an hour, we're back to discussing what dinner will be. The cycle continues until it ends somewhere around 11 p.m. with another snack on our lap. Sound familiar? One problem with our overweight society is that we've been trained to look at food as the problem rather than our approach to appetite. Food has become the focus of our culture, with fast food signs adorning every street corner. In hopes of fixing this obsession with food, we find diet plans that offer twice the binge at half the calories, or we reach for pills that will quickly shed the pounds. Sounds great when you find out that she can still eat till her eyes are leaking and not gain a pound, but what she isn't learning in the process is how to behave like a disciplined eater, or that God calls us to moderation in all things. He doesn't say, eat this, avoid that, or, hey girl, have you counted the calories in that bagel? He wisely instructs us to be moderate. 1 Timothy 4, verses 4 and 5 says, for everything God created is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it is received with thanksgiving, because it is consecrated by the word of God and prayer. Diets usually fail for one or all of these three reasons. Number one, no pain, no gain. We choose to sprint instead of training for the long run. Number two, we're spoiled. We try to change only the food that we eat instead of changing our mindset. Number three, lack of conviction. We don't truly believe that the benefits are worth the effort it takes to get us there. Which one are you? Reason number one, no pain, no gain. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Hebrews 12:11. What shape is your resistance muscle in? Has it been lying dormant for years? If so, I imagine that any workout, big or small, results in discomfort and pain. Training and discipline are so important to achieving success. Without discipline, we'll run the race for a bit, but tire out long before the race is won. We might pick it up again in 6 months to a year and do the entire sprint over again with the same result. If we want permanent solutions, we have to train ourselves for the long run. Since my husband Val played for the NHL, I have seen the vigorous training regimen he's had to go through. Val knows that in order to play the game, and to play it well, which he does, it's going to take training and conviction on his part. It's not about the way he feels at the moment, it's what he must do to win. An important aspect in training is that of our muscle memory. Muscle memory involves the repetition of skills until the movements become automatic. Many of us use the muscle memory for simple things like tying a shoe or brushing our teeth. The movements have been so repetitious over the years that we now do them without thought. Hey, I even find myself tying my kids' shoes without thought. In the same way, I had to train my resistance muscles in the beginning by saying no more often than yes. By repeating the exercise of discipline, I have formulated a lifestyle change. Let's be careful not to confuse this exercise with deprivation. It's okay to have dessert, even if it's a double-decker, chocolate chip brownie drenched in caramel sauce. But it's best to enjoy such things in moderation rather than daily. My rule of thumb for special treats is once or twice a week. It's good to resist, but let's not get extreme. I've also trained my thoughts to accept wholesome food as the norm rather than reaching for fast or fried food. Though it wasn't always that way. I was a girl whose mom took her to McDonald's for a quarter pounder and fries before every audition. But the more I consciously made an effort to choose healthier foods, the more I unconsciously became accustomed to them. Now these foods are naturally my first choice. Exercise is equally important to me as my diet is, but the only reason these changes became a permanent part of my lifestyle is because my thoughts were trained to accept them as necessary rather than optional. Reason number two, we're spoiled. The other night, I made chicken and salad for dinner, or maybe it was pasta. I don't exactly recall what we all had, but I do remember Max liking it all a little too much. When Max likes what he's eating, which is often the case, he just keeps on scooping it in until I notice his sweet little cheeks getting full, and I say, "Max, honey, you've had enough." It's a good thing I'm there to monitor him, since I fear the little guy may one day explode. After dinner, he started in on dessert, taking an apple, followed by a banana, along with the high hopes of having yet another apple or two, until I stopped him again. You don't want to be the person behind him at an all-you-can-eat buffet. Trust me on that. It was finally time to put the kids into bed. Lev was brushing his teeth, Natasha was reading a book, and Max was parading around the room tapping on his little round belly. Mom? He said, finally pausing for breath. There may be a problem. I think I'm pregnant. Lines like that aren't written in Hollywood. They're birthed in those quiet moments we pause long enough to breathe in the wonderful world around us. I had to pause for a breath myself while I stifled a laugh before explaining to him that he wasn't about to give me a grandkid, or by the looks of it, two. I also found it a good time to explain that we don't have to go hog wild when we're eating just because it tastes good. We need to consider what's best for our bodies, when to say when. It's my job as a mom to train him until he's equipped to make that decision himself. In much the same way, many untrained adults eat as they please because they aren't trained to consider the result of their actions. They see where their actions have gotten them, but don't realize the difference discipline would have made. One might say something like, "Overeating this once isn't such a big deal. I can eat this, that, and the other. Then I'll just get back on track in the morning." Getting on track is important, but the plan often falls through because we've started allowing sloppy habits to form. I don't let my kids get away with such behavior, so why would I condone it for myself? Spoiled eaters have never learned to control their appetite and choose to focus on the food instead of their lust for it. Their diet may consist of a day at the trough munching on countless low-cal alternatives instead of seeing the real problem at hand, volume. This line may sound familiar. "I can eat all the carrot and celery sticks that I want." My question is, why would you eat all the carrots you want? Shouldn't we just eat all the carrots we need? Once spoiled eaters tire of the tasteless all-you-can-squeeze-in buffet, the high-calorie foods sneak back in one by one. Finally, they wonder why diets don't work. Spoiled eaters seek out quick-fix diets that promise a lot in return for a little. Reason number three, lack of conviction. The unconvicted mind is destined for failure because when the going gets tough, and it will, they don't have a good enough reason to stick to the plan. Unconvicted eaters often find themselves hosting debates in their mind with food as the ultimate prize. They pepper their thoughts with persuasive arguments like, I'm already 30-something. Maybe it's time I accepted the fact that overweight is okay for me. Or, I'm doing so much work just so I can be 20 pounds lighter. It's not like I'll be prettier or anything. And, I have my whole life to take off the weight. Why worry about it tonight? All of these arguments may be worth consideration, but they should never be considered while in the throes of a late-night craving feast. A little soul-searching at the start of a journey is a good time to discover the reasons you want to lose weight. I suggest jotting them down on a piece of paper so you can pull them out for a read when you get that sudden urge to bolt. Better yet, review the list daily as a constant reminder. That internal argument is familiar to most of us, but do most of us recognize what it is? It's our flesh and spirit fighting to lead. Our flesh is ruled by passion and desire, but our spirit is led by wisdom and truth. So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. Galatians 5:16. Training my thoughts to yield to the Spirit is an exercise I do minute by minute and will continue to do throughout life. I wasn't always sure which argument it held, but it gets easier to discern over time. I now understand the consequences of my actions, and I'm led by my conviction. Just last night, around 10 p.m., my stomach started growling. It had been about 3 hours since dinner, so in good conscience, I could have had a light snack. But knowing I was going to bed within 30 minutes, I decided to fight my flesh, which desperately wanted a sweet treat, and yield to my spirit that told me, you don't need a scone right before bed. Wait and have a good breakfast in the morning. You know you'll feel better about it tomorrow. And you know what? I did feel much better about it in the morning. Learn to remind yourself, if I overeat today, I'll weaken my resistance muscle, which I've worked diligently to build up. I want to finally take the weight off this year, so I'll keep pressing on. This is an exercise we should apply to all areas of our lives, which I'll also suggest with many of the other lessons in this book. It's my desire that you find freedom through weight loss. No one should be trapped in a body controlled by their appetite, but first and foremost, I pray that you find this freedom through faith. What is your conviction? If you're not sure, it's important that you do a little soul searching to find it. Do you desire to lose a few pounds? To lose a lot more than a few? If you do, then consider the why. When we're able to answer that question, we can then apply a solution that works. The pantry, chocked full of food for thought. The main ingredient. There are many wonderful weight loss plans out there for us to choose from. In fact, it's easy to find one that's a fit for our lifestyle and health. The basic plan I suggest is to stop abusing yourself with food, start making healthier choices, and get serious with God. Move more, control your portions, make wise choices, and keep God close by your side. Stick to that plan, and you'll see some results. A slice of advice. Dear Candace, I read the article about you in the December issue of Us Weekly magazine. What really caught my eye was the amount of weight you have lost since Full House ended. For a small person like you, 22 pounds is a lot of weight. Throughout my adult life, my weight has literally been a yo-yo, up one year, then down the next. Every time I lose a substantial amount of weight, I manage to gain most of it back within about a 2-year period. Then I have to start all over again. At 52 years old, I can't keep on doing that all the time. For whatever reason, I have not been able to maintain my weight once I lose it. I do know what I have to do. My question to you is, how can I maintain this weight loss? I know that I have to exercise, and I have started walking after dinner. My problem is that once I lose the desired weight, I go back to eating. Once I treat myself to something, I can't get back on track. I would really appreciate it if you could share some of your secrets. I really need to hear from someone who has had success not only in losing, but also in keeping the weight off. Michelle. Dear Michelle, weight loss is difficult, and keeping it off can be even harder. Obviously, you know how to get it off, diet and exercise. Eating the right foods is key, and staying on top of exercise is equally important. Your changes need to be a way of life. It's okay to have a dessert here and there, or a side of fries once in a while, but bringing those foods back into your daily diet will cause you to gain weight back, and possibly more, as you already know. I make sure that if I'm going to indulge in some goodies, I do it moderately. Then I'm back to my wholesome diet. I'm conscious of what I put into my mouth every day, although I'm not obsessive about it, which can be just as dangerous. Honestly, because I've been eating healthy, fresh foods for so long, eating things fried or processed makes my body feel bad. It may give me a headache or make me feel tired or even sick. I don't like feeling that way, while knowing I can feel better just by the foods I'm eating. If you know that it's dangerous for you to eat your favorite unhealthy foods just once, then cut them out completely. I know for some people, it's all or nothing. If that's you, then refrain from eating all unhealthy foods. If, however, you can exhibit self-control and eat sweets in moderation, I would recommend this method. The latter works for me, as denying myself all sugar would make me go crazy. I prefer knowing I can have it, but choose not to, except on occasion. That is the exercise of my fruit of the spirit, self-control. I encourage you to wisely keep the mental aspect of eating and exercising in line with God's word. Renewing your mind each and every day through prayer and reading the Bible can help you get a grip on not going back to your old habits. Commit to keeping your body a holy temple. God can give you the strength to do it. It will shine inside and out when you put the right things into it. Candace. A pinch of practicality. Read Romans 7 in order to gain a better understanding of Paul's struggle in the flesh. Listen to how he compares it to the freedom found in chapter 8. Paul wrote those chapters so brilliantly, illustrating how one is the solution to the other. Start strength training by making wise choices that exercise your resistance muscle. Ways to strengthen your resistance may include passing on the junk food aisle in the grocery store, making a healthy choice when eating out, passing on the goodies at group meetings, taking one trip to the buffet instead of two or more, eating until you're satisfied rather than stuffed, limiting treats to once or twice a week rather than daily. Set aside some quiet time to write a letter to yourself. Let God in on this too. It may take one letter, it may take a few. Prayerfully consider the changes you'd like to see in your life and the reasons you'd like to see change. This letter is for your eyes only, so feel free to hide it or tear it up later. The important exercise here is that you decide what is good and why it's important to you before you continue this journey. Food for thought. The following list is a recap of the scriptures we covered in the chapter. You may find it helpful to post them around the house on little notes where you'll see them often. The Bible is a great encouragement for every step of the way. For everything God created is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it is received with thanksgiving, because it is consecrated by the word of God and prayer. 1 Timothy 4, verses 4 and 5, NIV. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Hebrews 12:11, NIV. So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. Galatians 5:16, NIV. The candy dish. Excellence is an art won by training and habituation. We do not act rightly because we have virtue or excellence, but we rather have those because we have acted rightly. We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. Aristotle. From my stove to yours. Easy chicken noodle soup. Ingredients. 8 small carrots chopped. 4 cups chicken broth, 2 cups water, 1 clove garlic pierced with a toothpick, 12 ounces boneless, skinless chicken breast, a third cup packed parsley, 2 cups dry egg noodles, fine, 2 teaspoons lemon juice, salt and freshly ground black pepper. Directions. Combine carrots, chicken broth, water, and garlic in a large pot. Cover and bring to a boil. Reduce heat to medium and simmer until the carrots are tender, about 5 minutes. While that is cooking, cut the chicken. I cut it into half-inch chunks. Rinse them, pat dry with a paper towel, and mince the parsley. Add the chicken and egg noodles to the broth. Cover and cook until the chicken is cooked through, about 5 minutes. Stir in the lemon juice and parsley. Fish out garlic clove and season to taste with salt and pepper. Chapter 3. Grab Wings and Soar. Reshaping It All has been a lifelong journey, which started the moment I took my first breath. Born on April 6, 1976, in Panorama City, California, to Robert and Barbara Cameron, I entered the world as Candace Helene Cameron. I was the youngest sister to 3 siblings, my brother Kirk, and 2 sisters, Bridget and Melissa. Dad was a public middle school teacher, while Mom's job was a stay-at-home role that ensured our faces were clean, our tummies were full, and clean underwear was ready when we were. Being the youngest of 4, I enjoyed special times with my mom. After the other kids left for school, we'd pick up some apple fritters and take on the day. I was her traveling companion, and together we had a lot of traveling to do, dropping clothes at the cleaners, picking up groceries, putting gas in the car, and finally, picking up my brother and sisters from school again. When Mom wasn't in the car, she was at the house, doing her best to make it a home. She made the most incredible spaghetti known to mankind, using a blend of tomato sauces, as well as both stewed and diced tomatoes. It was meaty and rich, with ground beef and Italian sausage, served with garlic French bread on the side. Stepping through the front door on spaghetti night is one smell I will never forget. With Mom around, we never went hungry. Dinner was always on the table, which was often fish and rice, or chicken with mashed potatoes and veggies on the side. Peas, corn, and carrots were regular visitors to my plate. It was also our thing to have turkey tacos 4 or 5 days a week. We loved them, and since they were easy to make, Mom made them a lot. It became a staple in our house that we all learned to make. In fact, they're so simple that I often make them for my kids, too. She could have used ground beef, but Mom knew turkey was a leaner choice that tasted similar to beef and was better for us. It does have a lighter taste, but once seasoned, there is not a big difference. We loved them then and still do. I loved watching Mom in the kitchen. Her long blonde ponytail would sway as she moved, and her smile told me she loved being there. I loved being there too, knowing I was Mom's helper when the kids were at school. Being a helper meant I got to taste everything too, which is probably the reason I hung out so much in the kitchen at all. When I think of my dad, I fondly remember white t-shirts along with his worn-out jeans that were stained with grease spots and paint blobs. Those stains served to remind us that Dad could and would fix everything. He was the ultimate handyman who put his skills to use on the house. They always lived in the same place, but over the years the house has gone through several major remodeling jobs, including the time our garage was transformed into a family room. Dad would hire out for some jobs, but any job he could do himself, he would. He drove a light blue Volkswagen Beetle to work every day and left the Volkswagen van for Mom and us kids. Because of his rugged, handsome looks and wavy brown hair, he was often compared to Michael Landon. Dad came from a background of healthy eating, while Mom was the opposite. She was brought up in a home that when they ate cold cereal in the morning, they needed to add 2 tablespoons of sugar to sweeten it up. At times, it felt like a battleground when deciding on the type of food and what we could eat. Mom wasn't deliberately unhealthy. She just wasn't as health conscious as Dad, who often tried to implement healthy alternatives. Our eating habits changed from year to year. For several years, we were on the Pritikin diet, which is based on a book by Nathan Pritikin. The diet is based on vegetables, grains, and fruit. It wasn't strictly vegetarian, but it did have a low percentage of fat. Basically, it tasted like cardboard. Dad taught us healthier ways to eat, but they weren't great tasting options. At the same time, Mom would buy chips for our lunch boxes, take us out for fast food, and keep a healthy supply of ice cream in our freezer. Her options weren't so healthy, but tasted incredibly good. She tried her best to respect Dad's efforts, but because she loved the naughty but nice food, she'd sneak it into the house. I started to view food in either one of two ways. It was either delicious but forbidden, or it was acceptable and tasteless. The bottom line is that I was left confused. I really believe that this confusion set the stage for the bad eating habits I had throughout my teen years and into early adulthood. Without clear direction and understanding, we're bound to face failure. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. James 1:8, KJV. Dad wouldn't allow soda, so drinking water was something he encouraged a lot. Depending on the year, my mom would have Diet Pepsi in the fridge, but that was the forbidden fruit we dare not touch. Thankfully, I acquired a taste for water. In fact, I love it, and it's still the first drink I reach for today. When I was 5, things started to get busy for my mom. She was running Kirk, Melissa, and me to auditions in L.A. Dad's schedule worked out perfectly. He was home by 3:30, so if Mom was busy driving one kid, he could watch the other three and help out with homework. I knew the routine. I would come out of school, and if Mom was parked at the start of the pickup line, then I knew that I had an audition. If that was the case, we'd leave right away and head over the hill to the west side. She would have my clothes clean, pressed, and ready to go so I could change in the car. I didn't wear fancy dresses of any kind, but I did have a few outfits that were my audition clothes. I had 3 pairs of Oshkosh overalls, one purple, one turquoise blue, and the other denim, which I rolled up twice for a cuff. A white t-shirt and pink Converse high tops finished the look. My mom thought that bright colors helped me look cute and hip. I suppose that I did look hip back then, but times have definitely changed. She also packed a butane curling iron so she could throw a few curls in my hair and put it in pigtails or a side ponytail. Unlike pageants, which I've never been in, makeup was a definite no-no for auditions. I had to look cute, fresh, and natural. Most days I was excited, but as the years progressed, or if the day was tiring, I'd be bummed out knowing that we had a long drive ahead. That's where McDonald's came in. It was well worth the drive if I knew a quarter pounder, fries, and a drink were in it for me. Even when I was just 6 or 7, a Happy Meal didn't suffice. That little burger was far too small. I don't know how she ever found the time to teach me how to ride a bike, but she did. I remember climbing up on top of it while she held the back steady. There was an incline on our street that looked like a mountain at the time, but when I look at it now, I see it's barely a hill. After holding onto the back for 2 or 3 days, she knew I was ready to take off on my own. "Don't let go," I said. But when we got to the top of the hill, she did. I didn't know it at first, but when I found out that I was riding alone, I was thrilled. It was smooth sailing from that moment on. I finally had wings to soar. Laser tag, hide and seek, and bike riding kept us busy on the street. I didn't play any team sports, but we were always active nonetheless. I was a regular-sized kid until about the age of 9. I wasn't big, and I wasn't small. When I hit 9 years old, the chipmunk cheeks set in. It was probably a combination of exercising less, being that I was in school full-time, and eating more junk since I was exposed to more food. I played jump rope at recess, but didn't get involved in vigorous games like kickball or tag. And when lunch came around, it was a tempting new world. We had healthy lunches packed for us, but unfortunately, those lunches were dull. While I ate cardboard, my friends feasted on ding-dongs, ho-hos, and cake. So like Michael Douglas in Wall Street, I became a master trader who managed to get my hands on their stock. I also started taking trips to the corner store with my friends. Soon enough, Pixie Sticks, Fun Dip, and Big Lig chewing gum were in a serious relationship with my tongue. I preferred sugar to salt, and still do to this day. I don't think my parents realized just how much access I had to junk. They were doing their best to keep our diet focused on health while I was finding ways to sneak in a snack. Our family wasn't the only ones with a health-conscious attitude. Our friends Ryan and Andrew lived much the same way, and since our parents were best friends, we were together all the time. In the winter, we spent almost every weekend with them, and in the summer, it was almost every day. Health wasn't the only thing we had in common. My dad did gymnastics in high school and college, and their dad did too. He was an acrobat in the circus. Their mom was too. In fact, after being a trapeze artist, she went on to be Tinkerbell at Disneyland. Hooked up to a harness and cable, 5-foot-tall Patty would descend from the Matterhorn, flying across the park with her wand. By the time I was 10, my all-too-famous chubby little cheeks had set in. I wasn't large, but I definitely wasn't thin either, and it was starting to show. That summer, my sisters and I hit the park a little more often with Ryan and Andrew, which gave us some exercise. I was also away from the ding-dongs at school. When I came back for the second season of Full House, I had lost 5 of those pounds, got a curly new perm, and had grown a bit taller. I was aware of my body, but at 11 years old, I wasn't obsessing. I remember Gina, the costume designer, saying, "Wow, you grew. You look great." In a sensitive way, she encouraged me. I felt confident and pretty that year. I got that spiral perm at a salon in the valley where my brother and dad had got their hair done as well. Mom had a few perms of her own, which was probably what spurred us on to get mine done too. My hair was almost to my waist by then, so with the weight of my hair, they were able to give me a tight curl. It was the 1980s. Linda Ronstadt, Whitney Houston, and Madonna had big hair. I wanted it too. Before the perm, Mom spent a lot of time curling my hair before bed. She liked to see my hair curled for auditions and special occasions. We used soft pink spongy rollers, which would hold the curl the entire next day. They were uncomfortable, but I got used to sleeping in them after a while. If we ever lost those rollers, and in a house with 6 people, we seemed to lose everything, she would use socks that doubled as rag curlers. Wrapping my hair around a sock, she tied each into a bow. Now they sell those spongy tubes that do the job, but we didn't have those back then, so I went to bed with a head full of socks. Our careers were a lot of work on Mom's part, but she did it because she saw both the fun and the potential we had. She didn't intend for any of us to be actors. In fact, her friend talked her into letting us take the plunge into acting. But once we started acting and doing it so well, we were excited and knew it was something we wanted to pursue. Our parents were upfront about giving us the option to leave. At age 7, after just 1 commercial, Melissa took that option. I think the process scared her to death. Life has a way of doing that to us. It can seem so alluring at times as we embark on new projects, but once we're involved in the process, we discover that reaching the finish line might take some tears and some sweat. I was blessed with my share of tears, too. An even greater blessing was having a mom whose arms were always open to me and who was ready with a listening ear. I remember running into those arms when I was about 13 years old. I was suffering from a serious addiction at the time, Kool-Aid. In those days, the thing to do was to buy packets of pre-sweetened Kool-Aid, fill up the baggie, and lick to your heart's content. Most kids had a stash at home they could dig into, but I had to hide mine in a backpack or keep the canister at school. It was kind of gross, actually, when you consider that I dipped my finger into the bag and licked it repeatedly throughout the day. Gross wasn't my concern at the time. The sugar rush was. After several weeks of doing this, the daily sugar crash took its toll on me until I finally broke down, crying in my mom's arms. I was unhappy with how I felt, and at the tender age of 13, also with how I looked. I wanted and needed a change. Mom has struggled with weight her entire life. It's always been a battle for her to fight the draw towards the food she loves. Bridget and Melissa were older than me, and both of them had a few pounds to lose. Collectively, we decided to join a popular weight loss plan, which involved prepackaged, dehydrated meals, much like astronaut food to me. I didn't really like adding water to dehydrated food or watching it come to life in the microwave, but it taught me portion control. Bridget responded well to the diet and got the most out of it. Like I always say, different methods of weight loss work for different people, but this particular one wasn't working for me. As I take you through this book, my hope is to encourage you to get off the fence, find healthy but satisfying ways to take off the weight, and build on a firm foundation that you can stand on for life. I'll hang on to the back of your bike for a while, but soon you'll be riding alone. There is a place of freedom when the trying just becomes living. It becomes smooth sailing from that moment on when you finally have wings to soar. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. Matthew 7, verses 24 and 25. The pantry, chocked full of food for thought. The main ingredient. Confusion about our bodies and our health only leads to ongoing frustration. We need to stop the cycle of yo-yo dieting and settle on a healthy way to live. There is a better alternative than tasteless yet healthy food, and there's also a better alternative to a diet filled with fast food and sugary treats. It's delicious food that works to the benefit of our bodies. With a deeper understanding of what works to our benefit, we increase our chance at success. A slice of advice. Dear Candace, I've seen photos of your family and you're all beautiful. Your daughter's looking like a miniature you. So cute. You all look so radiant, it's amazing. I read somewhere online, maybe Twitter, that your children love sushi. I couldn't believe it because I can barely get mine to like tuna. I want to train my children to eat healthier food. I try to eliminate sugary sweets and oversweetened cereals as much as I can, but my husband and I are at a constant battle on this one. He thinks that if we deprive them of good food, they will just want it all the more. Any advice you can give us? Janelle. Dear Janelle, thanks for your kind words. I think my kids are radiant too. Hopefully, it's a bit of the Lord shining through, but I do believe it's also because of what they're eating. I think your husband is viewing healthy food as the enemy, so maybe you can help him discover tasty choices that are good for us too. I encourage you to try some of the recipes in this book and experiment a little on your own to offer some good alternatives. Treats aren't the enemy either. It's okay to have them occasionally and in moderation, but keep a close eye so they don't overindulge. Just like us, their hearts need to be trained to listen to their heads. But for now, they're listening to you for that guidance, so grab the opportunity to guide them well. There's nothing wrong with rules. In fact, many rules are there to save our lives. But telling someone to live according to them and giving them a reason to live that way are two entirely different things. One is preaching, the other is teaching. Set healthy boundaries for them and let them know why you are doing it. They might not appreciate having to eat asparagus as a side dish, but encourage them to have a bite. Who knows? They might like it. Get them to try it again the next time you make it, because their taste buds are continually changing. Hope that helps. Candace. A pinch of practicality. Eating good food is one thing. Dining well is another. Here are five practical tips for eating that will help you slow down and improve your dining experience. Number one, eye your food first. Does it look like too much? Decide on the smaller portion and stay within your choice unless you find you're not satisfied. You can always go back for a little bit more if need be. Number two, use smaller plates. Smaller plates gives us the illusion of larger portions, and larger portions convince us we're satisfied. Our ancestors ate off dishes that are much smaller than we have been accustomed to. Number three, have a glass of cold water with your meal and take sips often. Drinking water will help you slow down and enjoy your food. Number four, engage in conversation if you're dining with others. The fellowship is equally as important as the food, so sit back and listen between bites. Don't worry, your plate isn't leaving. Number five, chew your food slowly. The longer you take to eat a meal, the less food you will consume. And by eating slower, you will also savor the flavor. Food for thought. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. James 1:8, KJV. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came